Richie Neal, my congressman, Massachusetts 1st District Democrat. I always ask you one question when I'm fortunate enough to be able to speak to you, because you know more about Ireland than anybody I know. So let's just spend, we've talked about in our past discussions, we've talked about Hillary and we've talked about Bernie and we've done the rounds. But now I want my fix on what's going on in Ireland.
Well, we're coming off days of celebrating what is known as the centenary of the Irish Rising in 1916, which gave foundation to the modern state. It was at the time considered to be almost a fool's errand. And when Patrick Pearse stepped outside of the General Post Office in Dublin on Easter Monday of 1916 and read the proclamation declaring a free Irish state, it was a rebellion that was crushed in a matter of days. But it's interesting because in the proclamation, it's one of the few declarations of independence that it noted the inspiration of America and also spoke to what he called the exiled children in America. And it speaks to Irishmen and Irish women. And what is noteworthy about the rising was that on Sunday morning, there were 4,000 British soldiers in 1916 in Dublin. And by Friday, there were 20,000 British soldiers. And as much as the rising was met by bewilderment and skepticism, because it began on April 24th, was over by April 30th, but the executions began on May 3rd. Mm-hmm. And all of a sudden, these individuals, the seven signatories who had participated in the rising, they were summarily executed. And American public opinion was outraged. And opinion in Ireland was galvanized. So all of a sudden, you have this transformation of opinion, which in some measure led to independence. It's also noteworthy that these folks were poets and that they were teachers. And Yeats and Joyce and George Bernard Shaw all rose to their defense. So what had begun as sort of a Don Quixote moment all of a sudden became, in American lexicon, a Madison, Jefferson, Washington moment.
Who was Kevin Barry?
Kevin Barry was a young soldier, and like the others, he was not noted for his military skills, but as he was executed as a very young man, and he became a martyr to the cause as well. There's an extraordinary tradition that deals with what are known as the hunger strikes, and it has been a very important part of Irish history, and it was always a statement of principle. And unfortunately, an awful lot of good young men succumbed to hunger strikes in an effort to shake off 800 years of subjugation. And Kevin Barry would be one of those, like Terence McSweeney, and in our time, Bobby Sands.
Yeah, but Kevin Barry had a song.
Kevin Barry gave his young life
and that was
well.
That's,
we ritualize those songs, as you know, and that they become martyrs to a cause. And I think also that's part of the lexicon of the great regard that they hold for the written and spoken word.
Yeah. So every once in a while, you see something happen, emanating from the trouble, from the friction, north and south, which is one of the great things, and you had a lot to do with solving that problem. But every once in a while, somebody does something stupid. Are you worried that the whole thing could unravel?
I think you have to constantly monitor it. I did an event recently with the Edward M. Kennedy Institute with George Mitchell and Peter King, for those of us who are part of the architecture, and we talked about the lessons that have been learned, and we talked about how it was done, and we talked about the critical moments. So I think that there is, again, a reminder that the longest-standing political dispute in the history of the Western world could be, I can't say brought to heel, but I think it can be mitigated. So there is a representative democracy up and running in Belfast. There is no longer a border, and the watchtowers are gone. 30,000 British soldiers are gone, and the policing, which at one time was one section of the community using the police to keep the other section in line, that has been radically transformed. So I think that there are some very important lessons to be taken away, but not to miss the point that in each conflict around the world, there are also separate issues that cannot be, I think, modeled after what happened in Ireland.
Do you think that, because I think about this every once in a while, that what you guys did with solving this problem could be, and I think you sort of alluded to it just now, transported to Syria or Iraq. I mean, are they just, is it a different culture with different people who can't, and I hate to say it this way, but aren't capable of rising to the occasion like the Irish did?
Well, I think your point is well taken, because I also would note that it was Lord Balfour who helped to ensure that the lines that were drawn across the Middle East were drawn in an arbitrary manner, which actually were used to separate the tribes. And he was also active in the advice that he gave in, on the island of Ireland to kind of keeping the tribes apart as well. So I think that colonialism has had a cruel impact for the British after all of these years. And so I think that that lesson is clear, whether it's in the Middle East or it's in Ireland or other places in India and Pakistan as well. So I think that they're noteworthy examples. But I do think there's one takeaway that you can apply, and that is you have to understand what the other side needs. And in the end, the IRA, they brought along their followers, even though they told their followers, you're not going to get a united Ireland today. And the unionist community, I think that the great miscalculation that they made was intransigence and never preparing their followers and supporters for what was going to happen, and that was the establishment of an agreed-upon Ireland.
So will there be a united Ireland?
I'm ever so hopeful. I think we're well on the path. The demographic trends are very clear, and at the same time, I think that part of the genius of the Good Friday Agreement is for those who wish to express their English roots, you can do it. And those who wish to express their Irish roots, you can do it.
Well, let's face it. I think part of Israel's protection in our country is because, and I'm Jewish, Jewry is only 2% of the country. It's a very powerful reminder to politicians that this is very important. Is that true also of the American Irish?
It is, and I think that you can sum it up by saying that American foreign policy has always been in some manner, shape, or form a manifestation of domestic policy. But there's another principle that's involved that we cannot dismiss, and that is support for democracy. I mean, democracies don't attack other democracies. And I think that they don't employ starvation. They don't employ ritualistic killings. And I think that that is the notion that in a democracy, you have a chance to get elected, have your voice heard. But the principles of democracy also involve free speech, freedom to assemble, freedom to express religious views, and a free press. And I think that those are very important considerations. If you can't establish those as institutions of democracy, it becomes very hard to promote the notion that you are, in fact, part of a representative democracy.
What do American Irish patriots think about Churchill's legacy? I mean, Churchill was a colonialist. There's no question. He didn't want to let it go. Has his reputation among the Irish survived?
Well, I think whether it's Gladstone or Churchill, they both advised the British government in a principled manner on the following. They pointed out that they might win the war of subjugation on the island of Ireland, but they could never win the war of opinion in America. So therefore, it was always going to be a problem. And I would take that to Tony Blair, who met us at the British Embassy when he was leaving. And in his comments, he said the following. He said, America and England, or Great Britain, that they generally agreed on just about everything. But there was one issue that they didn't agree upon, Ireland. And he pointed out at that moment, which I must tell you with personal satisfaction, he said, I want to thank you to a handful of us. He said, you helped us get past it. And, you know, Gladstone tried twice. Gladstone pointed out that, again, America was going to be the decisive factor. Churchill said the same thing. And, you know, the Unionists at one time, they actually kind of flirted with Nazism, because their argument, Carson actually said at one point that perhaps Kaiser was better than the Pope. And I think that Churchill's response to that was, I want to remind you that we will level Belfast in one night. So I think that if you read Churchill's memoirs as outlined by William Manchester, or you read Roy Jenkins' marvelous book on Gladstone, they are always concerned about American public opinion. And their point is that we just cannot win this argument in America. And I think that Tony Blair confirmed it.
Well, when the next time you're teaching a course in Ireland, I want to sign up. You are terrific. I mean, you always teach me something. It's great to have Richie Neal with us, Democrat of Massachusetts 1st District, my district, in office since 1989. Wow, that seems like an eternity now. and Richie, thank you so much for doing this. Appreciate it.
I always appreciate your thoughtfulness, Alan. Thank you.